Yes. On a gorgeous evening in Manhattan, it is my esteemed pleasure and honor to welcome you to the inaugural edition of the MMA Rated Radio Show. Of course, my name is Ariel Helwani, and for those that have sort of been with me since this all started back in the JerryPark.com days, and now in the MMArated.com days, it is great to have you here, and you know that I've always been working, trying to get my own radio show, my own podcast. Personally, not a huge fan of the term podcast. Always felt that it sounded a little amateurish. So just to make my ego feel a little better, I'm going to call this the MMA Rated Radio Show. And not really sure how this is going to work, how, you know, if it's going to be every day, every week. The ultimate goal is to have this go down every single night, recapping the world of mixed martial arts, doing our thing, the news, rumors, featuring the interviews that we love to do here at MMArated.com. For now, it probably will be once a week and then build from there, and I hope that you enjoy it. Give us feedback. I should be like that guy on the ESPN.com show and keep plugging my email address every 4.5 seconds, but I won't be that annoying, although it is a great show. We can talk about that later. But first and foremost, the MMA Rated Radio Show, and it's an apropos time to kick this whole journey off because I just got back home from Las Vegas, Nevada. UFC 84 went down last night. We did a lot of work over there. Very, very exciting stuff that you should be enjoying in the next couple of days or so, leading up to Elite XC, which we'll be also be covering live and in attendance. I actually wasn't sitting on press row for this particular show. You know, the UFC isn't a big fan of websites, and I understand where they're coming from. You know, they want to have a one-stop shop of news and multimedia over at UFC.com, and they don't want other startup websites such as ourselves to come in and sort of rain on their parade. So I was sitting with the regular folk up in the stands at the MGM Grand Garden Arena, and it's been a while since I actually attended a show in Las Vegas. And I mentioned this in my sort of recap of the event. I couldn't believe many things. First off, I couldn't believe the amount of surgically enhanced ladies walking around the arena. Unbelievable. I mean, this was akin to going to any strip club. It was insane. And people are dressed up nicely. I mean, you go to, you know, I go to baseball games, I go to hockey games, basketball games. You don't see people dressed up as nicely as when they go to a UFC event. It's weird because, and on the flip side, you have this sort of image that it's this brutal trailer park trash-like sport. And, you know, it is a brutal sport, but for some reason, everyone brings out their Sunday's best when they come to these events. And the other thing is, I never really noticed, and maybe this has to do with the fact that I'm starting to get a little more into this world now, never really noticed how many people wear fight-related clothing to these events and around the hotel throughout the weekend. It's all Affliction, Extreme Couture stuff, Tap Out, Sinister. I mean, it's amazing how everyone goes to the fights representing their favorite line. And I don't know, no disrespect to the guys who love that stuff. I'm just not an Affliction guy. It's way too busy for me. Just don't feel really any of the MMA clothing lines out there. Perhaps I'll throw my name into that hat somewhere down the line, but you know, one step at a time here while we're taking over. And you know, the other big thing that I want to talk about is just of the stuff that we've accomplished this weekend and a little bit before that on MMArated.com. But let's talk about the big show itself, UFC 84. Like I said, I was sitting with the regular folk, and I am convinced at this point that unless you're sitting very close to the action, it's probably better to just watch the show on TV. I think that you miss a lot when you're watching it from the stands, particularly when you're like sort of in that mid-range where the cage is blocking you. I had a videographer and a photographer blocking my way, and caught myself watching the big screen many times. The atmosphere in the MGM Grand Garden Arena, much thanks to BJ Penn's appearance there on the card, was very electric. A lot of excitement in the crowd, a lot of chance for BJ, of course, and you know, no surprise that when he came out, he probably got the biggest ovation of all. The show for me, I had a chance to watch the main event again, and had a little better of an appreciation for it. I didn't really love it live, especially after you watch Sean Sherk shoot in the first like 10 seconds. And then you think, okay, the Muscle Shark is going to, you know, try to do what he does best and out-wrestle BJ Penn. And then the rest of the fight turns into just a boxing match. I mean, just a jab fest from BJ. Who knew he was such a great, great jabber and just totally dismantled Sean Sherk from bell one to the final bell in the third round when he when Sean couldn't go any longer. I thought that BJ, once again, a masterful job, but continues to reinvent himself. We continue to see a different side of BJ Penn every time out. And he, again, like I said, on his feet, did a great job in terms of breaking down and sort of chopping away at Sean Sherk via the jab, very much like the Jardine Liddell fight, in the sense that it's, you know, the guy who was suffering in the bout never did anything to try to switch things up. And then also his camp, Sean Sherk's camp, never, I mean, what fight were they watching? Didn't they try to maybe say, okay, this is not working, let's try to go to the ground here? And it was weird to see that no attempts were made to try to switch the flow of this fight and bring it to the ground. I thought that was a very, very strange move on their part. But nevertheless, maybe there was something that happened that we didn't know. Maybe he was injured. It doesn't seem to be the case. But I thought that was a very weird decision on their part. After the fight, thankfully, BJ didn't tell us to go check out bjpenn.com for more information. So we got to hear a little bit from him. And it seems as though he is very much willing to take on George St. Pierre. And I think it's weird, all the calling out of George that's been going down. Didn't everyone realize that there's a fight scheduled in August, UFC 87, BJ Penn going up against, excuse me, George St. Pierre going up against John Fitch? And I mean, sure, George has been fighting great over the last year since the loss to Matt Serra, but I mean, John Fitch could very well win that bout. And then if he does, I don't think it makes much sense for BJ Penn to fight George St. Pierre. So I find it very weird that everyone's trying to call out, you know, George on behalf of BJ. And I've read online people saying that that's the only logical fight out there for BJ Penn. And I highly, highly disagree with that. I mean, you got Kenny Florian, Roger Huerta fighting at UFC 87. That should be a great fight. And that should really, the winner of that bout should definitely get a shot at BJ Penn in my mind. And then you got guys like, you know, Tyson Griffin and Frankie Edgar out there that are doing their thing. And why shouldn't they get a shot at BJ Penn? I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that BJ Penn should get a shot at George St. Pierre, whether it's at 170 or they're going to meet at a catch weight. And that leads me to another thing that pisses me off about all this. One of the things that I hate about the sport of boxing is when a title holder, you know, Kelly Pavlik, wins the title, then he fights Jermaine Taylor at a catch weight and the title's not on the line. I'm a big fan of titles. I think that they mean a lot. I think that we should try to do our best in the world of combat sports to restore their legitimacy. And I think the UFC has done a masterful job of making their titles seem like they're important. And they're doing a pretty good job at that right now in the WC as well. You look at the featherweight title fight coming up between Jens Pulver and Uriah Faber. That means something. They keep saying this is the most important title fight at 145. So why would you have your champion go up, face another champion? You're not going to unify the titles. That would make absolutely no sense. So I really think that all this talk is premature. We know that BJ wants to get another shot at George, and I welcome it, but just not right now. Not right now when one of the guys is a champ, and especially when both of them are champs. So we'll have to see about that. I hope that it doesn't happen in the near future. And again, George needs to get by John Fitch first and foremost. And you can make the case that there aren't many great opponents left for George once he does defeat John Fitch, or if he does defeat John Fitch, but there's a lot that can happen between now and then. On the flip side, Sean Sherk, well, where does he go from here? I don't think that this was the type of performance that at least you can win back the respect of your peers and the fans that were so hard on him. Certainly now, hopefully he can move on from all this. I don't think we'll be seeing any admissions on his part, but at least just move on from it and throw his name into the hat of the top contenders in 155. I mean, I don't think he should get a rematch at any point. I think it's always weird when, you know, you think of a guy like Dan Henderson, right? And Dan is saying that he wants a rematch against Anderson Silva. Well, I'm of the mind that if you lose to the champion as the challenger, you shouldn't get a rematch. I mean, the champ beat you. Maybe down the line, if there's a new champ there and you build yourself back up, then you should get another shot at the title. But I don't think you should get another shot at the champion again while he's holding that belt. So Sean has got to work his way back up. And I think it's kind of fitting because I felt that he got the title shot too soon. I think that whether or not he wants to admit it, if you are suspended for steroids or any type of performance-enhancing drug, I don't think you should get a shot after getting stripped of the title right off the bat. I think you should prove your worth again and sort of build yourself back up. But he did get the shot, and obviously it's probably going to seem to be a great decision on the part of the UFC because I'm expecting this one to do fairly solid in terms of pay-per-view buys. So that is the deal with Sean Sherka. The other big news, of course, Tito Ortiz, and I mentioned this as well. You know, it's interesting because I sat in my seat maybe 10 minutes after sitting there, they put up some footage of Ortiz in his locker room shadow boxing and preparing. And right off the bat, I thought, wow, that's pretty weird that, you know, they're trying to, you know, ban him and censor him and not welcome him this weekend, the UFC 84 weekend. And of all the fighters that they're going to show at the top of the, of, you know, when the doors are opening, there's, you know, just the diehards filing into their seat. They're going to show Ortiz. Why are they even in his locker room? Why are they trying to still promote him? There's, you know, five other main event caliber fighters on this card, and yet Tito Ortiz is being featured. So I thought that was a little weird. And then we hear that Punishment Athletics is sponsoring this bout, the bout between him and Machida. I thought that was a little weird as well. And then at the end, he loses. The big talk was, oh, if he wins, will he get a chance to talk on the mic? He's hanging around. He's walking around after the fight while Machida's talking. And then he gets to talk on the mic, and he's so complimentary of everyone. And obviously, we know about all the shenanigans that went on in the post-fight press conference, but if they really wanted to censor him and if they really wanted him out of there, they wouldn't have given him the opportunity to talk after the fight. And now we hear, courtesy of our friends at 5OuncesOfPain.com, that Ortiz was offered a contract prior to UFC 84. So I really feel insulted by this. Let me rephrase that. Insulted is probably a little bit of a strong term, but I think it's so ridiculous, all the stuff that went down. Like, to me, this was pro wrestling 101. And for MMA fans out there that don't like pro wrestling and don't think that has anything to do with mixed martial arts, well, look at this and look at all the crap that went down between these two guys. The UFC didn't have to let Ortiz talk to ESPN on Friday. And, you know, I think that there's no shame in what they did. They're creating a buzz for a fight. They're creating some extra intrigue. But I just think it's just so ridiculous for us to think that, you know, he's this outlaw and he wasn't invited to the press conference. I don't believe that crap for one second. I think it's so fucking ridiculous that they would even try to make us believe that Ortiz is sort of public enemy number one right now. I don't believe it at all, and I'm not going to believe it with the way everything went down yesterday. As for the fight itself, well, wasn't exactly, you know, it actually was exactly how I expected it to be, just due to the fact that Lyoto Machida is not exactly the most, you know, guns blazing type of fighter out there. And, you know, to be honest, I think Machida still has a lot of work to do. You know, this sport, as we all know, as much as anything, is often based on, you know, not just what you can do in the cage, but how you sell yourself. And I think Machida needs to learn that. And I'm not trying to say that, you know, he should compromise his abilities in the cage, but he definitely needs to learn that style that he's fighting is not one that fans are going to gravitate towards, and ultimately he's not one that's going to get him a lot of money. And he's not going to earn a lot of money off of that, simply because if there's a pay-per-view out there that is going to be headline at some point, if Machida does build himself up to be the champ by Lyoto Machida, man, I don't know a lot of fans out there that are going to be plucking down $45 to watch him fight. I thought that he was very elusive throughout the fight. I thought that he didn't bring it strong to Ortiz. Unfortunately for Tito, when Machida did bring it, he brought it a little better. And he had certain points where whenever he inflicted or decided to inflict damage, he did it that much better than Tito did. It's a weird situation because at the end of the first round, I really thought that something went down between the ref and the UFC Everyone did in the arena. Everyone thought that the fight was called way too prematurely. It's a weird, I don't know if anyone out there has noticed this when they go to a live event, but there's no bell to signal the end of a round. It's just the ref. There's even no bell to signal the beginning of a round. They have the one guy with the two little chalk things signaling 10 seconds left in the round, but I find it weird for the live audience not to have the bell, and everyone thought that the fight was being stopped. That would have been insane, and that would have definitely put the nail in my sort of theory that that this whole thing is sort of rigged, but Machida brought it strong then, brought it strong at the end of the third round as well, right before Tito reversed, and that reversal there and going in for the triangle choke looked like he had it secured. The guy who was definitely a great wrestler, Tito Ortiz, but no one had seen his submission skills in a while. Thankfully for Machida, he had his arm snuck in there, and he was able to defend it quite well before surviving the round and ultimately the fight itself. And you look at Tito now, and really, you know, Dana always says it about him not winning a big fight since Vitor Belfort in 2005, and you got to say the man has a point. I mean, you look at Rashad Evans, his last fight. Wasn't a sort of very convincing victory. Even if he would have not, you know, held on to the cage and all that stuff, it was ultimately a draw, but it wouldn't have even been a convincing victory. Then you had the Chuck Liddell loss. And then, you know, Ken Shamrock, you know, what can you say about that? Ken Shamrock, definitely a guy that it was a, you know, shell of his former self. So then it was Forrest Griffin and then the Belfort fight. So you look, it's like almost 3 years since he's had a really, really great victory. That's Tito Ortiz. Where does he go from here? I again, would not be shocked to see him fight in the UFC again. I definitely think that Elite XC is going to try to make a run for him, but who knows really what the hell is going on with Elite XC. You hear a lot of rumors about their demise. Is that greatly exaggerated? Who knows? Do they even have money to pay him? And if it's not Elite XC, I don't think, you know, maybe Affliction could do something, but who knows with them as well? I mean, they're not signing guys to exclusive contracts, that's for sure. So I think Tito wants something secure. I think he wants the big money. I definitely think that there's a home for him in the world of professional wrestling. But I asked him that question a few months ago when we spoke, and he said he wasn't interested in that at all. So it looks as though, for me, his best bet is to go to the UFC, stay in the UFC. I don't think that there is really anything out there unless Elite XC can get their finances, you know, all in form. The kind of money that he wants to make, whether he likes it or not, it seems as though the best place for him is in the Ultimate Fighting Championship. But who knows what's going to go happen. I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more drama coming out from both sides well after UFC 84. The third big main event on the show, Wanderlei Silva returning to form, as everyone is saying, defeating Keith Jardine. And, man, Keith, it's just this guy is – who the heck knows? I mean, everyone didn't really take him for real after the Forrest Griffin win. Especially didn't take him for real after the Houston Alexander lost. Then he gets a shot at Chuck Liddell, fights well. Chuck Liddell lost that fight himself, if you ask me. And now he gets a shot against Wanderlei Silva, a golden opportunity to, like he said so many times, cement his place in the MMA record books. 36 seconds is all it took. Wanderlei Silva just chomped him down. And the axe murderer is, I guess, back. I don't believe so. I think that you can only say that a fighter is back until he actually gets involved in a war and until he actually, you know, is tested. You know, Wanderlei would have defeated Chuck in that three-round affair, then he would have been back. But I don't think you can truly say that a guy is back when he wins the 36 seconds. I think that's as much the fault of the loser for not bringing it strong and getting caught. And that's, you know, that's MMA. There are going to be guys that are going to lose these shocking losses in less than a minute. But for a guy like Wanderlei that just lost three in a row to the creme de la creme, no doubt, in the world of mixed martial arts, I have a hard time saying that he's truly back. Anyone notice that when Silva walks to the cage, he seems like a little off. He seems like he's kind of like wobbly a little. And I don't know. I just get the feeling that, he's just not back. It just doesn't seem like the old, confident, sort of focused Wanderlei Silva. I may be completely wrong, but that's just my assessment on Vandelay. Speaking of being back, Sokoju coming back strong. I think that this is definitely very, very welcoming and also very exciting for the UFC and Sokoju. They buried him on the undercard. I thought that was a mistake. I thought that there's a lot more intrigue in this bout as opposed to the Gouveia-Relich bout. And Sokoju, with his victory over Nakamura, getting back on the winning side of things, defeating him in the first round. And this was the aggressive Sokoju that we knew. And he, you know, he fell prey to Lyoto Machida. And maybe it was a big mistake. You talk about matchups and you look at what they're doing with Brock Lesnar now. We can talk about that a little later. But man, you look at putting him up against Lyoto Machida, probably not the best decision in terms of trying to build this star up. Now he's back on that track again, and hopefully good things to come for him, because I think he could be a huge star in the sport. Clearly, you defeat Arona and Nogueira back-to-back. It was actually Nogueira and then Arona. You should be considered a force to be reckoned with. And, you know, props to Machida, but it's good to see Sokoju back winning in the UFC. You know, there were a lot of other interesting fights on the card. Shane Carwin winning in 44 seconds. Shane is a guy, I saw him walking around the hotel. Huge, man. This guy is thick as a freaking redwood tree, and looks to be the real deal. You know, so I kind of want to give people insight, instead of just running down the whole card, about what the experience is like being at a hotel where the fights are taking place, because it's unlike really any other sport out there. You walk anywhere in the hotel for 30 minutes and you're going to walk into maybe 25 fighters, whether it's fighters that are fighting on the card, guys coming in to, you know, cheer on their, you know, camp members or whatever, or just guys there, like Roy Nelson was there, you know, like you just, it's amazing. It's unlike any other sport. Even when you're watching the show, up and down, you know, you're sitting in your seat and you see Jens Pulver walking by, and, you know, over there is Evan Tanner taking pictures with people. It's such a bizarre thing. And I think one of the reasons why MMA fans are so loyal and feel like they're such a big part of this community is because the fighters are so accessible. And we had the pleasure of that. I mean, we're just walking around and Mark Coleman's there. And, you know, day after the announcement of his injury, it's an awesome thing. We ran into Jason Mayhem Miller. You're going to be seeing that interview later on this week. Also ran into Troy Mandolonis. Also ran into Dan Henderson. Did interviews with those guys. Ran into a whole bunch of guys. Unfortunately, I didn't have my cameraman Omar with me, so I wasn't able to do the interviews all the time. Should try to figure out a way of just getting a tripod and doing them myself, because I could have banged out like 40 or so interviews, but it's just amazing to see the guys walking around. One little piece of advice, if you're going to try to go and do interviews, don't do it next to a casino. I knew that going in, but man, those security guards are an intense bunch. They caught us in the middle. We were doing a story on the Affliction show, and they weren't really happy with us and followed me all the way up to my room. And I'll be honest, I was a little scared to go back out. But eventually they forgot about us. But when I came down, there was like five or six security guards on the first floor. Luckily, we snuck by them. We were okay to go. We hang out at Extreme Couture. We did a whole bunch of cool stuff. Kung Lee. So definitely be checking that out. You know, the show for me, from the live perspective, I thought it was an okay show. I don't think it was the best card of the year so far. So far, you know, in the UFC, I think that UFC 80, a very underrated show. Someone mentioned this on MMArated.com, a very, very underrated show. It wasn't stacked in terms of big names, but it was, you know, fireworks aplenty. I thought that was a great show. 81 was, you know, you had the Brock Lesnar stuff, so that definitely had a lot of intrigue. Nogueira Silva was a great bout as well. 82 was okay, and 83... I thought was, other than the St. Pierre fight, a pretty boring show, kind of mired by the performances by Caleb Starnes and Travis Luter. So I guess it could You could make a case for this being the best card of the year, but no real heavy favorites so far. And probably right now, in terms of just pure excitement, not big names, I'd probably have to give the tip of the hat to UFC 80. Perhaps if I watch UFC 84, the telecast of it, I might have a different opinion. But if you've never been to a live event, definitely check it out at least once. It's amazing, especially when it's a big name out there doing his thing, and the crowd reception for BJ. The music, I love his music. I think his music, the guy sitting next to me said that it was a little underwhelming, the music, and lacked that sort of energy that you want. But I thought his music is just amazing. He's been using it for the last few fights. Vanderlei Silva's music is so ridiculous, but it's so amazing too. The sort of club, the generic techno, kind of ridiculous, but I think it screams Vanderlei. I've been waiting for this moment for all my life. Oh no. I think it was Antonio Mendez. I can't remember now who it was. Or maybe it was Terry Etim. I don't know. One of those guys had that song. It was awesome. There's also, speaking of music, the Teenage Wasteland kicking off the show, that video montage. I think it's awesome. I think I've said awesome like 14 times in the last 3 minutes. So definitely exposing my vocabulary right now. But it's a great piece of work. I just think it's kind of rough around the edges. The beat of that song moves very quickly, especially at the beginning, and I hate how the cuts don't move to the beat. Maybe that's just my critical television production self looking at it, but I think that they could do a better job. I don't like how they fade from one fight to the next, and it seems like it's almost like a whole compilation of the Matt Hughes Frank Trigg fight, because that fight is like featured so many times throughout. Definitely my favorite part, it actually gives me goosebumps when they just let like a minute of Forrest Griffin versus Stephen Bonner one, the fight that put the UFC back on the map. They just let it go, and it's awesome. It's a really, really cool experience to kick it off. I've been to obviously boxing pay-per-views. I've been to wrestling pay-per-views. I've been to the Stanley Cup Finals, the NBA Finals, and the electricity in the crowd for a UFC show is just amazing. It's really amazing, and they do a great job. And perhaps on television, there's a lot of things that they can work on, but live, I think they do a pretty good job at it. You can say that. Maybe they can have, I went to that HGNet Fights show, the one in December, and they had guys talking between the rounds. But I feel like that's good if you're trying to distinguish yourself. But for the big dogs, you don't need it. And you just kind of let the action speak for itself. Jay Larkin makes a point that live, the cage doesn't really lend itself for great viewing. But, I don't think they're going to be changing that anytime soon. You definitely saw Bud Light in full force. Harley Davidson has their new sort of get prepared, ready, like little block there where the ref and the cut men put the Vaseline on the fighters' faces. I thought that was interesting also about Tito. If you notice, Steve Mazzagatti tried to get him to take off his shoes and his shirt, and he said no to it and ran into the ring or the cage with his shoes. I thought that was a little disrespectful. Dana likes to say that, Tito thinks that he's bigger than the sport. And at that point, there's so much, especially in martial arts, how there's so much respect involved and history involved. To me, that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And I was actually, I thought Tito was going to win, and part of me thought it would be intriguing to see him win, but it sort of rubbed me the wrong way, where I felt like, all right, whether or not this whole thing is real, I thought it was kind of the ref, Mazzagatti, nice guy, trying to get him to take off his shirt, just doing his job, and Tito would have none of it. Sucks that he didn't come out to the Eminem song. The dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. I forget the name of the song, but it always works well with him and the flag coming out there. I love that he brings out the Mexican flag, too. It's great. He's just such a great guy. And that's pretty much the 2 cents on the show. Like I said, afterwards, definitely a lot of fighters. Everyone's walking around. We went to an after party, Ariane's after party, which you will probably be seeing some great media from in the coming days. Sokoju was there. Dan Henderson was there. Who else was there? Edith was there. It was a pretty solid showing at the Hawaiian Tropic Zone. By then, I was kind of tired of Vegas. But when you're in Vegas for like 3 days and the smell in the hotels and the smoke and the noise from the casino, just very, very happy to go home. And it is great to be back home. Other than that, not a lot of huge news going down in the world of mixed martial arts now. Of course, we had the news of Mark Coleman getting out of his fight due to injury against Brock Lesnar at UFC 87. And we met up with Coleman. And for anyone out there that's ripping on me, I definitely muffed it. I definitely messed that interview up. I made a mistake with the 6 weeks question. The thing was, in my defense, two things that I'd like to just say. Number one, he totally caught me off guard being there. And this was right after when I noticed that the security guards were on our tail. So I was really nervous that they were going to kind of step in and ruin the interview. So that's why I was talking like 400 miles an hour. And then when I asked him the question about the injury to give us more on it, he answered like four questions within the question. My next question was going to be, how long are you going to be out? And he answered that right at the end of his response. He said, and I'm going to be out for 6 weeks. And then I was like, So I totally messed it up. It seemed as though I kind of pissed him off later on, but I was just trying to see, you know, and get from him what the people wanted to hear. You know, this is a guy who's coming back to the UFC after all those years, legend of the sport, has a great opportunity to sort of put down one of the rising stars and gets injured and it sucks. And I just wanted to sort of reflect that and give him the platform. I hadn't heard any interviews from him, give him the platform to speak his mind. Now it seems as though Heath Herring's going to be stepping in. And I think that's a very, very questionable decision on the part of the UFC. I know that they're not trying to give Brock tomato cans, but Heath Herring, man, it's a guy who beat Czech Congo and a guy who's been around the sport forever. And now you're giving him a shot against Brock Lesnar, man. Brock Lesnar is as green as can be. I thought that Justin McCulley would be good enough. And now they're putting him up against a guy who was a couple wins away from being in contention. I mean, he almost beat Nogueira. I mean, this guy could technically be the heavyweight champ right now. If he would have defeated Nogueira, and then maybe he would have got the shot at Tim Sylvia for that interim belt, and now they're putting him up against him. I think it's a very, very strange decision. But, obviously Joe Silva, I'm never going to question that guy because he does a great job with his matchmaking. So I guess they have their reasons. Another fight that was announced this weekend, Mac Danzig going up against Clay Guida. Saw Clay Guida and Mac Danzig both this weekend. There was a guy who looked like Mac Danzig. Actually don't know if it was in fact him because he was wearing like a cool hat and it didn't really look Mac Danzig-esque, but regardless, he's going to be fighting Clay Guida, who is definitely there. I definitely saw him, and that should be an awesome fight at UFC 87. Two rising stars. Guida definitely needs this fight. He's gone 3-3 in the organization thus far, and he definitely needs to get back on the winning track after that tough loss to Roger Huerta. The other little thing going to drop you before I let you go, the guy I was sitting next to, this great guy, will withhold his name. He was there on his bachelor party. He was actually a quasi MMA rated fan. And that was the cool thing. You know, we actually met some people that knew about MMA rated. We've only been at this game for not even 2 months, and people knew who we were and knew about the videos. And I really, really appreciated that. And one guy actually knew, came up to me and asked me, "Hey, are you the third wheel from the Edith video?" And yes, my friends, that is I. Anyhow, the guy sitting next to me attended a cocktail party for the Octagon book, the Kevin Lynch $5 million Octagon book. And he said that he spoke to Dana White, and Dana White told him that Tough 9, not this one, the one coming up probably, I guess, fall of 09, that should be. Or maybe, yeah, maybe, fall of 09? I know, spring of 09. It'll probably be like April of 09. It's going to be live. So take that for what it's worth. I'm not, you know, saying that this is breaking news or anything. He told me that Dana told him that I tried to confirm it with my sources at Spike TV. They said they hadn't heard anything of it. Perhaps they're lying to me. But such is the case, he said that to look out for live. I think that's an interesting decision. I guess the fights will be live. Who knows about all the drama and the stuff in the house? How are they going to do that? I don't know. They're going to have to blow this whole thing up if it's going live. Of course, we know about the weekly fight series that's supposed to debut in 2010, so maybe this will be sort of a precursor to that. But if it does go live, I think it's a strange decision. This is a show that's getting a 1 point something every week. To me, not justifiable for it to go live. It costs a lot more money for Spike, for Zuffa, for everyone involved. To do a live show, there's a reason why a lot of shows aren't live. It's just a lot more expensive, and I just don't think that, for me, the show is not lacking because it's live. I don't, that's just me. We never find out who's winning the fight, so who cares if it's not live or not? I just think that this is more of a supposed to be, especially with the way that they're bringing in talent that is not the creme de la creme in the respective divisions. It's got to be more about the show than just the fights, because the fights rarely nowadays are living up to what they used to, you know, put out there. Tough one, tough two, tough three. Really, I think that in terms of great fights, the show has gone down since tough three. I think tough three was it reached its climax. Tough three, great competitors, obviously Shamrock and Ortiz. They knew what the show was about, and since then, I think the comeback show was a bit of a failure. Although I love the idea of having the vets, I thought that was great, and it was a little underrated in terms of the production. I thought they did a great job of giving us the backstory. It just didn't really work out well with the coaches, or lack thereof. There weren't any coaches. It was a hard thing to do. And then tough five was great with BJ and Jens. The fights were okay. Tough six again, it was okay. And you know, it's just nothing like tough three, and obviously tough one. Tough one, it's funny to watch it now how different the show was, and sort of how, like, you know, they had the contests, and Willa Ford was involved. So different than what it is now. Maybe they need to go back to that. Maybe they need to go back to more of the challenges and things like that. Who knows what the public wants. My voice killing right now, definitely tired from a long, long weekend. But like I said, definitely keep it locked here. We've got some great, great footage. We'll probably break out one each and every day. Shot maybe like 15 or 16 different features, and also going to be on the scene for the Elite XC show in our backyard. Finally, no traveling in Newark, New Jersey. Going to hopefully hook up with all the main players involved there as well. And going to be sitting cage side doing interviews, video interviews, and just trying to keep doing things different over at MMArated.com. I hope you enjoyed the first show. Like I said, a work in progress, but just want to get the ball rolling on this and get the people involved. And hopefully we can start breaking out the live aspects. We've got the technology. We've got the capabilities, but I just wanted to start things out slowly but surely. As always, I appreciate all the support at MMArated.com. We are, again, as well, a work in progress, but subtle changes are happening on the site as we speak. But definitely, I appreciate all the support and the people who have linked to us and the people who have checked us out and continue to do so on a daily basis. This has been the inaugural edition of the MMA Rated Radio Show. My name, Ariel Helwani, in case you forgot it. Love to plug it away. You know, they used to call me the franchise, but I kind of dropped that one. And one day I'll give the whole backstory as how I got to this point, but I thought that would be a little boring for this inaugural show. Thank you very much for the time. Definitely send us comments, emails, all that stuff. And hopefully we'll be incorporating guests and maybe even a co-host one of these days to this show. But for now, I appreciate everyone checking in. Appreciate everyone listening. MMA Rated Radio Show. Peace. I'm out of here.